This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Lining up with some tempo here. Keeper! Touchdown! Marcel Reed! The magic continues and the Aggies stretch the lead.
I'd like to know where Lou Holtz is right now.
Oh, I win. Google me.
We're not hosting an intergalactic kegger down here.
Lou Holtz is watching the best team in the state host LSU and beat LSU. I don't know if they're the best team in the state or not. I just wanted to troll Bobby there on that one. A&M with their statement win of the year, 38-23, a come-from-behind win. They were down 17-7 at the break. Marcel Reed comes in for Connor Wegman. And really does a tremendous job of the second half. And they wind up winning that game 38-23. Thanks in part to three picks from Flower Mound Marcus's own Garrett Nussmeier, or Neusmeier, as the TV anchor called him.
It is Nussmeier. They're good. Like, A&M's really good. They've got one loss, and it's a loss, a game they should have won. It was week one. There was still a little bit of sloppiness. Like, Elko's done a really good job there. Like, I don't think they're 7-1 with Jimbo coaching this team.
I don't think they are either.
Who a few years ago would say that the Texas A&M Aggies or any college program would be better off with Mike Elko over Jimbo Fisher?
Yeah, I would not have guessed that. I would not have guessed that.
Do you feel this is legit? Is this
They're very good. They're tremendous. They're really, really talented. This is a lot of Jimbo's players, right? That are being finally coached.
And what did you think of Elko before?
I mean, he did well at Duke, and that's not an easy place to play, to perform well at. Cutcliffe did okay there, but, I mean, he never did anything else. He didn't do great when he was at Ole Miss. He did okay, but not, like, tremendous. Elko's doing a bang-up job at a place that you should be able to play well at and perform well at. I mean, they've got all the money and the resources that you could possibly ask for. They don't have to get on an airplane to recruit a single player. They can just drive to Houston, drive to DFW. Drive to Austin, whoever they want, right? And that's the beauty of being Texas A&M. But for all there is, they've pretty much punched their ticket to Atlanta for the SEC championship game.
Whoa.
They're undefeated in conference. They're the only undefeated team in conference. They're 5-0. They might lose to Texas. They have a home. It's a home. They're playing at home. But they go to South Carolina this week. It's a night game. It's not easy. The road game, but they should do it. They should win. And they go to Auburn again. Not easy road games, the SEC, but they're gonna be favored. And then they got Texas. Even if they lose to Texas, LSU still plays Alabama. They might lose again. Tennessee plays Georgia. They're probably gonna lose. It'd be between Texas and Georgia in terms of how A&M winds up getting in or not getting in to the SEC championship game. But if you make it, I'm gonna tell you this. And this is kind of the worrisome thing for college football. The conferences are kind of in charge of who makes the playoff. And this is one thing I don't like. Like, they're going to go in here and look, and, like, you know, the conferences are going to say, you know what, we think that these four teams from our conference should make it. Now, that's going to carry some weight. And are the conferences going to look at their standings and say, nah, this team's better than this team, even though this team's ahead of you in the standings? I don't think they're going to do that.
College football's done it with Bama recently. So
yeah, I mean, that's the point. Like, but I don't know that they're going to do that now with the conferences, because they're going to want to protect the integrity of their standings. But A&M is in the absolute driver's seat.
How many people predicted them in the SEC championship game before the year?
What were they ranked? 7 or 8 to start the year?
Were they that high?
They were high. They were high when Notre Dame beat them. They were high, but not the
either way. Bama, Georgia.
Or Bama, Georgia, Texas were the clear favorites.
Yeah, and I mean, like, they've shown themselves to be really good, and it's to a point now where it's like, depending on what version of Wegman they get on any given day, if they can get a more consistent output from Connor Wegman, A&M's probably pretty easy, right around top five or six.
Yep. Biggest issue for Texas right now is that offensive line.
They were 20th, by the way.
Oh, they were 20th with Notre Dame?
Notre Dame was 7.
Okay. Close. Biggest issue for Texas right now, Bobby's horns, Peyton's horns sometimes, is their offensive line, which is supposed to have been one of the best in the country. And talent-wise, it may very well have been. But in the last two games, Bobby, they have allowed 11 sacks, and they do get the win on the road.
Not just the tight ends, but lost some yardage in the receiver room. And here's DeAndre Moore. After a slip tackle, Moore takes it in from 25 yards out. Second touchdown of the game for DeAndre Moore. That is now 17 straight completions for Quinn Ewers.
That call was on Fox. 27-24, Texas wins over Vandy.
Yeah, my Commodores got out to the early lead, tipped interception, early scare, but Texas really controlled this throughout. It got a little fun and interesting at the end. Bobby, would you like to brag? Would you like to pour some salt in the wound of your Longhorns over my squad?
No, see, this is a prime example of why you don't I'm not going to be in Alabama and spike the football about a 3-point victory over a team that we should have beat by 20.
Yeah.
I'm not going to take that. I'm going to say it was a disappointing performance.
Yep.
And I hope it wakes them up. And for the love of God, will Quinn Ewers throw the ball down the field? Quinn Ewers throws the ball short of the stick. Like, it's Paxton Lynch-esque, the way he's just, all right, 3 yards every single time. And it's getting really irritating.
And you said that this betting line was an easy one to take. 18.5. 18.5, and you bet Vandy and won.
I bet Vandy and won. It was, I thought it was an easy one. And Bobby, you mentioned that about Quinn Ewers. Of the 79 quarterbacks in the Power Five, where does he rank in average depth of target? Peyton, I'll ask you this question. Of the 79 quarterbacks, where does Quinn rank in average depth of target?
I'm going to go 74.
Close, 79. Of the 79 quarterbacks, he is dead last. And now Sark says he's elite. And this is just
the world said he was elite.
Yeah, well,
people were telling me he was first rounder, top pick consideration and discussion. That's what I heard in the offseason. That's all I kept hearing. But this deep ball thing was a big criticism last year.
Yeah, and look, I mean, he definitely is somebody who, yeah, I think he's trying to show that he can be a patient, like take a profit, you know, field general type, but they've got to take some shots. And he doesn't. Arch, for all the issues that exist with Arch in terms of pocket presence and some of the gunslinger mentality that has shown up in some of his games so far, he will at least push the ball down the field and try to take advantage of some things down the field. And they feel more explosive when he's out there. The problem is just he has no awareness of the pass rush coming, and he'll get blown up, or he'll, you know, slide around the pocket and bail from him when he doesn't need to. And if I could combine certain attributes of Quinn and Arch together, I'd get the best quarterback in the country. But right now, there's flaws in both of them, and I still wonder, I hope, he's got to be a little dinged up still, Quinn. He's still not totally back, and that's part of what we're seeing, but I don't know. This is a couple different times now where when he's gotten an injury and he's come back, he looks rattled.
Maybe tucking in the shirts worked for Alabama. They went and they rolled Missouri, and what's that?
Congratulations. In Alabama, finally, they snapped their streak of 6 games in a row where they trailed to an opponent.
Yeah, they did not trail. You can't trail when you pitch a shutout. They put it on Missouri, a Missouri team that had a lot of hope coming into the year, but really has been one of the bigger disappointments around college football. Notre Dame put it all over Navy, and this was a big miss from the degenerate. And Notre Dame, first of all, Texas A&M is helping Notre Dame out big time. With every single A&M win, Notre Dame looks better and better. 51-14, they beat Navy. Indiana is the team to watch out for. They are going to be a bid stealer. They win 31-17 with a backup quarterback, mind you. They win 31-17. They are 8-0, and they've got a very manageable schedule. They do have to go to Ohio State, but they play Michigan State and Michigan, who stink, and Purdue, who can't score against air. So it is, I mean, they're going to be a one-loss team. When it's all said and done, they're going to be a one-loss team. It's going to be very, very difficult to keep a one-loss team out of the college football playoff. Watch out for Colorado.
Uh-oh, I was right, then wrong, then right again.
But, yeah, they have been hit with a big ratings drop. The TV viewers have have abandoned them. You know, they only got 2 million people to watch the other day. You know, for a comparison, Michigan, Illinois got 3.5 million, and the Colorado K-State game got 2 million.
When was that game on?
Tennessee got over 10 million.
When was that game on?
I think Colorado it was the K-State game.
Yeah,
it was on. I think it was on against Alabama, Tennessee.
Oh, same time.
I think it was at the same time. I think okay. It was an afternoon game. But down 34% from the same week of the last year. Their first 7 games this year down 49%. But. Not only are they bowl eligible, they got a sneaky chance to sneak into the playoff. They missed the 2 best teams in the Big 12. So they don't have to play Iowa State or BYU this year, okay? They get a road game at Texas Tech, home to a Utah team that lost their quarterback and is 1-4 in conference. They get Kansas and then home to Oklahoma State. So when the season is over, they will have played the 4 worst teams in the Big 12 and just 1 of the top 4. So that's kind of the problem with this mega conference scheduling. Colorado's going to get a benefit here, and they do have a sneaky chance of being able to slide into the Big 12 championship game and then win the outright bid.
Are you feeling wrong about them yet?
Yeah, sure. I mean, they're having a great year. Yeah, absolutely.
Travis Hunter becomes the first player to simultaneously... This is badass. He won Big 12 Player of the Week for offense and defense.
Yeah, he's the first one in the history of the conference to do it because it was he won it for offense this week. I'm trying to remember what he won it for defense. It was week 5, I think it was. But he's been
yeah, but he won this both awards.
Yeah.
After the Cincinnati game, like not 1 week and then the other week, he won both the awards this past week, I believe.
I don't know if that's
to simultaneously win. Doesn't the word simultaneous mean that he won both of them
on the same week?
In the same week,
that would make sense to me.
So get a dictionary, Bobby.
Yeah, Bobby. UTSA lost the weekend. UTSA lost the weekend. They were up 35-7 at the half. They lose 46-45 to Tulsa. A Tulsa that's really, really awful. This was one of my bets too. So that really kind of sucks for me. Ohio State, Penn State is this weekend. Huge game. If Ohio State loses, that puts a real wrinkle in because they also play Indiana, and they already have a loss to Oregon. That game is going to be right here on the Fan at 11 a.m. on Saturday.
My likability bowl of Ryan Day versus Penn State, even though Franklin did apologize.
He did apologize. He did apologize about the press conference that he held.
What a bunch of jackasses.
Yeah. I mean, it's an apology, but it's also, there's a little bit of but. Kind of in here.
I'd like to say I want to apologize. I didn't do a great job of handling Wednesday. Difficult situation. And I got to own that I did not do a good job of that. So I understand you guys got a job to do. You got to ask those questions, and I respect that. The university put out a statement, and the reality is I think there's not a whole lot more I can say other than that statement. It's an ongoing legal situation, and it's challenging. It's challenging on everybody.
That clip is only worth it for the person typing.
Yeah.
What is that position? What is that? What is that called?
The court reporter?
Stenographer.
Stenographer. Wow.
Yeah.
That was impressive.
I mean,
it sounded like a presidential address.
They're banging away at those keys.
Yes.
Oof.
James Franklin, Penn State versus Ohio State, Saturday, 11 o'clock here. That is RJ Choppy with his college football kegger on DFW Sports Station. We have a ticket giveaway for you, turning it on, leaving it on. Jerry Jones live at 8:30. But was Trayvon Diggs right about his effort in the run game and what else jumped out in Cowboys post-hut clarity? Bobby with the film review, then Ask Credit, and tickets to hook you up with Commercial-Free Expressway is next.
It is post-hut clarity here on 105.3 The Fan. You know, when we go back and watch these games, typically, there's always something. The reason why this segment exists is because you go back and you watch it, and there's stuff that you feel differently about. And this was obviously something that we watched the game on Sunday and thought, boy, they got their ass kicked. It wasn't as close as 30-24.
I will say, though, that 30-24 did take away, I think, a little bit of like my anger or disgust versus what happened against the Lions. Like, If it was, you know, 40 to 14, 30 to 7, yesterday, I mean, I felt dead. I needed the Tolos to bring the anger over the phone lines, which they did.
You got Edgar Allan Poe'd. You got Ravened. That's what you did.
Evermore?
Yeah, exactly. It's you got the Raven game syndrome, and it smoothed it over for you a little bit.
Make no mistake, it doesn't change my mind about them whatsoever, but it had me being like, all right, San Fran's not that dangerous. They're not that lethal. That's what I left that game with. Not any improvement for the Cowboys. I was a little bit surprised they didn't get just their ass whipped and bullied and pushed around in the first half, but I was like, all right, San Fran's not the same team as a couple years back.
This is the fewest differences or notes that I've had watching the game back.
The fewest?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
This looked exactly like it did on TV for the most part. Mm. So just a couple notes here that are a little bit different, but things that I think are still worth pointing out. First off, we talked yesterday, I said Cooper Beebe, Tyler Smith, Tyler Guyton. I thought that from center to the left side, that side of the line played pretty well. And Beebe and Guyton did. Beebe and Guyton, going back and watching it, they were really good in this game for the most part. Tyler Smith was not as good as I thought. Watching that back, he had some struggles, particularly in pass protection at times. And so he's somebody who's been your most consistent offensive lineman throughout the entire season and has played at a really high level. That wasn't the case yesterday. He was on Sunday. He was given some trouble on passer stuff. Some of the hand usage wasn't always in sync. This was a game that I thought Guyton and Beebe, both the rookies, probably for the first time that both of them outplayed him. And so, wow, not as strong a performance from Tyler Smith as I initially thought, but the rookies played well, so that was good to get that confirmation that they were playing better. Trayvon Diggs.
Before you leave the offensive line,
mm-hmm,
he's your guy. You're always defending him, it feels like, or you want to defend him. Give a grade on Terrence Steele's season.
Like on a 1 to 10 scale?
Whatever. Homeschool scale, regular school, whatever you want.
Go to the Richter scale.
Five.
Okay.
Like, I mean, dead in the middle average.
Barely move your painting.
Because T. Jetman tweeted us, listening to Snacks, you guys mentioned Steele. Do you think he earned the extension he got on his own, or because of Martin next to him? It seems to me that his play has come back to the mean now that Martin is in clear decline. Interesting tweet.
I mean, part of what has always made them good, he helped make Zach Martin better too. Like, they work so well in combo together on run blocks. And so the problem is that when he got back from the knee injury, that was limiting him, I think, last year. And he's just, now it's, the knee shouldn't be an issue anymore. And it's, he just has not played up to par. It hasn't been good enough. There are times where the run game stuff looks like it's coming back a little bit, or he'll have a good rep here. But I mean, Bosa obviously gave him some issues. But it felt like at times easier than it should have been for Nick Bosa. Like it was still stuff where he didn't have to work super hard. He didn't have to do any freakish, like, supreme technician Nick Bosa stuff to be able to work over Terrence Steele in this game. There was just stuff where it's like, oh, he's off balance, or, oh, he completely missed with his punch. That's not good. Like, there was still, this was not a good game for Terrence Steele, and there have been too many times this season where it's not been a good game for Terrence Steele. He's included in that whole group of, you know, Dak, CD, Diggs, guys we're talking about, of have you gotten the return on the investment you made? And the answer is no so far. Trayvon Diggs told Micah Parsons, hey, I gave my best effort, I thought. I thought I was pretty good on the edge, setting the edge. I thought I had a decent game. So I went back, having watched this, because I wasn't sure exactly how Diggs played. They were getting beat in general in that third quarter. But going back and watching it, Trayvon Diggs had a good game. And Trayvon Diggs was giving effort that we didn't see in Detroit. The Olays and stuff like that he was doing against the Lions, those didn't exist in this game. He was trying to be physical. He did at times. Like he said, he mentioned, I felt I set the edge well pretty, you know, a few different times. He did. He was actually really good at making sure that he was disciplined, playing with physicality, staying where he needed to. I didn't think he was terrible in coverage for the most part. And so I thought this was all around a pretty solid game for him. And definitely his best game in run support that I've seen him play this year. And so he's right. That was something where feels like a little bit nitpicky to go after, yeah, his play when
I thought it was nitpicky.
There are plenty of other weeks where you can point to Trayvon Diggs looking like, did you give effort there? Did you want to play with, you know, physicality? I felt like whatever message they were trying to send that week about we got to match San Francisco's physicality, it clicked with Diggs. He took it and went out there and tried to apply it. So he gets credit for that and played well. I don't think this is a week you can rip Trayvon Diggs for being poor physically. Chauncey Golston was really good in this game. And he didn't flash much to me watching it live. And I don't know if there's a more anonymous player than Chauncey Golston. Like, if I were to mention Chauncey Golston among the people who play regularly or who play starter snaps, essentially, isn't he the one who, when you think about it, you go, I don't know that I can think of identifying factors with that guy at all. Like, yeah. To me, he's the most anonymous player I've ever seen, good, bad, otherwise. It's so vanilla almost with him in a lot of ways. But he's been decent this season. He's been disciplined. He does his job. He's got a little bit of the Tyrone Crawford syndrome where they can't decide whether they want to play him inside or play him outside. And so they've been yo-yoing him his whole career, and it's probably caused some, you know, stunting of his growth. But he was good in this game. When we talked about, we felt like the run defense was better earlier in this one and that they were making plays, that was in large part due to what Chauncey Golston was doing in terms of setting the edge, disengaging from blockers, making stops. He was actually he wasn't bad. He was really good. And if you can get that out of him consistently, the run defense will be better. And then the other one that really stood out to me in this one when watching it back, Oso Odighizuwa was really good in this game. And he's somebody who I feel like has been a little bit of a letdown this year in terms of he plays with the highest motor of probably anybody on the football team. Like, he is always going, and he's physical, and he's an athletic freak and big, strong guy. There hasn't been the same sort of impact I felt like most of the time. Now, we had the Giants game where he didn't have a single pressure, but he was double teamed so much that it freed up most of their pressures that day. So he's still doing his job and contributing in that way, but we haven't seen the normal splash stuff with him where he's shot through the line of scrimmage and made a big play. Usually his issue is he tends to slow down in the back half of the season because he plays with his hair on fire so much. But he was good in this game. Had some penetration on a few different times, brought pressure. And again, where they weren't getting much pressure at all, he had some pressure in this one and made some good plays in the run game. So I thought Oso Odighizuwa and Chauncey Golston were pretty solid for you on the defensive line. And Mozzie Smith, this is not a clarity thing, this is post-hut confirmation, Mozzie Smith was awful.
Awful?
Awful. Did not look like an NFL player. Should not have been on the field. You could have played somebody 220 pounds on the one technique and gotten more resistance.
Don't look.
Okay.
Don't look. Are you already there? Did you see it?
I have seen the team grade. I have not seen.
Oh, my God. Guess his PFF grade on the season.
37.
BFF?
21.
Wait, people are going to think that I'm calling you best friend forever.
Yeah, that's not the case.
32.6.
I didn't know what the grade was. I knew he's 119 out of 119.
32.6 is what?
It is a non-NFL player. That is not an NFL player.
32!
He's in the red.
Wow!
For the game,
it doesn't even look red. It looks like puke orange.
Yeah. When I was out at the bar in San Jose, and I was watching these large drunk women get into it, and I watched them tackling each other in the parking lot.
Stop! Explain that.
Nick Harris and I went to a bar in San Jose, a extreme dive bar where there was these two drunk women getting into it, just screaming at each other about, "You slept with my man." "No, I didn't. I would never do that to you."
You didn't record it?
Well, at first I thought it was going to be done pretty quickly. And then every time I pulled out I did try and record it like three different times. And I would tell Nick, like, "Shh, be quiet. Hold on. I just want to record this." And then they would inevitably just hit a lull. It's like they knew I was recording or something. But they went
They're
into,
like, "Hey, I'll give you that mozzarella stick."
Man, they were.
Take a break.
This was
fried pickle over there.
This was when I saw those two rumbling around in the parking lot, tackling each other at a combined
rumbling
700
were they
pounds.
In the parking lot?
Yes, two women, probably 5'2" each of them, and a combined 700 pounds. I sat there and thought these two would give more resistance on the interior than Mozzie Smith. Yeah. Like, somebody should call Jeff Skinnier right now and be like, "You got to get down to this bar. I found your solution." Jeff Skinnier, the Cowboys defensive line coach. Get him down here. These girls play with leverage.
They play with leverage.
Like, they would give you some resistance in the A gap. No, at one point one of them tackled them, and you heard her head pop, hit the concrete, and just reverberate through the parking lot.
So wait, did you go out of the parking lot to watch the fight, or you just saw through the
window? We were on the porch, so it was right in front of us. Like, it was happening right at one point. They were they just started throwing punches at each other, and then it would calm down. They'd be like, "You're my friend," and we're like, "Oh, they're good again. They're friends."
What is with fighting in California? It's my buddy's he's at all the World Series games. He got tickets for every single one of them. And he texted me after the Friday game, and he goes, "Yeah, shocker, there was a brawl in our section,
what the heck?
I think someone got stabbed after one of the other games." And then, you know, he was there last night. And, of course, the Yankee fans had as much fight as the team did. Yeah. So there's no fights there. But what is going on with...
I thought supposed to be peaceful, weed-smoking hippies.
You would think so. They're not, man. They're ruthless.
Yeah.
They're killers.
They're killers.
They are ruthless killers.
Yes.
By the way, Mozzie had a 49 grade for this game on PFF.
That's wrong.
Post-hut clarity here on 105.3 The Fan.
So that was kind of the big takeaway. Mozzie Smith to me was, again, that was confirmation, not clarity. Was that Mozzie Smith he's
over?
Back to just an awful player.
Is this over?
Probably. I mean, it's hitting Taco Charlton, Tristan Hill levels of just like, you're not a good player, dude.
Dan Orlovsky had his own type. You'll like it. You'll like it.
I won't like it. It doesn't matter what it is. I won't like it.
You have to admit, just like I was wrong about Travis Hunter, I blame CBS Sports, though, a Jerry Trayvon Diggs type apology.
That was very quick.
He did not win offensive and defensive player. Get some grammar people up in there, CBS Sports. He did not win offensive and defensive player of the week in the same exact week. He has just won it within the same season. Dan Orlovsky on the misery of watching the Cowboys offense.
There's two teams on tape I hate watching right now. It's the Dallas Cowboys offense and the Jets offense. Archaic. That's the best way for me to describe them. It's like looking at lined paper, theme paper. Everything is just this boring straight line. And I've talked about all season long, no offense sets their quarterback up to fail more than Dallas Cowboys.
Ooh. The Cowboys and the Jets offense, the most painful to watch, a boring straight line out there on the field.
We were talking about it up in the press box, some of us, and this idea of for an offense with the Cowboys where it's just looked so effortless to score on teams over the last 3 years, the most basic things look really difficult for them. Everything looks like it's really difficult and challenging to get done, just basic stuff. And that's a problem. And it feels like it goes deeper than just you're missing a guy here. Do you have this weapon here? Like, it's stuff where it's like, it shouldn't be this difficult to just execute a simple run play or get lined up the right way or run these cons. Everything just feels like it is a struggle. Every first down is a battle.
All right. This is, by the way, Kurt Warner agreed. Yesterday he tweeted, man, this Cowboys tape is a tough watch again. Mm. Play design, details, execution, because can't be sure which one it is. Dak not playing well. It would be so frustrating watching that as an offense.
I'm going to yell at somebody really quickly because they're taking issue with something that's happened. Sure. 817. Bobby, that's what you took from that? You rewashed. I didn't rewash. I rewatched 817. You rewashed and said Diggs had a good game because he gave effort on 2 to 3 plays this game. What about the 80% he watched his teammates and took plays off and the effort for all the previous games this season? Your standards must be Jerry's standards. Ooh. As far as effort. Or like I keep saying, you're scared, Y-O-U-R, so possessive, I guess. You're scared to call out Diggs. Well, 817, no. We've called out Diggs plenty. I think I said after the Detroit game that Diggs was the worst player on the field and gave no effort and quit.
And that he should probably be the one dealt if you're going to pay Bland.
And so here's the thing, 817. If you watched the film yourself and if you knew what you were watching, I would listen to what you had to say about this. But I watched it back. He played well. I'm sorry that that's uncomfortable. I'm sorry that you have such a personal distaste for Trayvon Diggs that you can't look past that. I have things that I don't agree with on Trayvon Diggs. I don't like the way that he flips out and, you know, feels like everything's a personal attack whenever he's asked to have some accountability. But that's not going to be enough for me to lie and say he didn't play well or that he didn't give effort, because that's just not true. And I'm not going to be that unprofessional and nitpicky to act like that. He played well, and there's no legitimate criticism to really give him for this game.
Well done, Bob. I thought that was going to be much, much worse. Steven Jones, I thought this was going to be much worse and ugly with KMC. Mm. Great question by Kevin Hagelin. Has the thought ever just crossed your mind that your football team isn't good enough?
No, I mean, I just think, you know, this team's made up of a lot of the same players that won, you know, 12 games the three prior seasons. I think it's, you know, right now we're just going through adversity. You know, we've had more than our share of injuries, it feels like this year, especially on the defensive side of the ball, coupled, you know, with a new staff and a new scheme. So on the defensive side, so, you know, I do think we've got really good football players. It's a matter of getting them, you know, executing together and getting after it. But, no, I think we've got, you know, really good football players. And at times, you know, we've had spurts where we played well. And obviously at times we're not playing well.
Now, look, Stephen, God, did he sound defeated yesterday listening to that interview. Cool, Lord. But he has to answer it that way. But they're gonna hang on to this injury thing. I can already hear in the offseason. Micah, Bland, Tank.
Yeah.
They're going to go back to that over and over and over again, probably in propping up whatever defensive changes are made and the optimism for 2025.
Yeah, I mean, look, I mean, there's a fairness to that, like, right? You know,
of course,
they're not there. Yeah. It's absolutely you're missing three really, really good players, arguably your best three.
Yeah, the problem
but
is
they were not great before.
That's the problem.
But then again, Bland was not there, so it's a big loss, especially at that position.
It is, and when you are going to pay your highest paid and lose the depth, you can't have the injuries. And they have had the injuries. The Deron Bland thing is a very, very big deal. But we've all just reached a point as a fan base, we don't care. We're not willing to give any passes. We're not willing to give any excuses. We don't want to hear it. We don't want to hear it. It also did not help. If they would have lost like 13-10 against the Saints, or they would have legitimately lost a close game, not a fake makeup right, with Dak stats like the San Francisco game against Baltimore, Maybe I think about it. The problem is those two other games were played with everyone there, except for Deron Bland, which is a big loss, but everyone has freaking injuries. Right? Everyone loses people. We don't care. We don't want to hear it. We're not buying it. Let's hook you up so you don't have to buy this.
All right, Tolo's right now. Call at number 10 at 877-881-1053 wins a pair of tickets to see Gabriel Iglesias on January 31st at Windstar. That's call number 10 at 877-881-1053.
Jerry Jones live at 8:30 this morning. Has he ever had D's nuts dropped on him? That'll be JJ.
I wouldn't ask it like that.
At 8:30. Well, you're the one that's going to be in charge. I know. It'll be fun for you all over TMZ. Bobby, this was a fascinating batch of questions from Brian Broaddus' favorite segment.
Do you have a question, Kelly?
Yeah, I have a lot of questions. Number one, how dare you?
It is time for Ask Reddit here on 105.3 The Fan, 877-881-1053, 877-881-1053. We will kick around some of the most viral questions being asked over on Ask Reddit this week, and we'll get some of your answers on the Twitch and on the YouTube and over on the fan text. So weigh in on these. RJ Choppy, we're going to lead off with you. What's something you wish people would stop romanticizing?
Oh, great question.
The NFL of the 70s and 80s.
What's wrong with the NFL of the 70s and 80s?
Like, cool, you ran the ball a lot and you gave everyone dementia.
Oh my god.
Like, awesome. Like, that's cool.
I'm surprised you picked on the NFL of that era versus the NBA of that era.
Well, the NBA of that era is, I didn't think of it. That's why. But yeah, the 90s NBA, 80s NBA. Anytime, you know, before.
You throw a 90s NBA under the bus as well.
I mean, yeah, like that.
But you don't like this NBA.
I think you just don't like basketball.
I love basketball.
Like college basketball.
I love college. I don't like the NBA. I don't like isolation.
But you've
basketball.
Gotten the opposite of isolation now. That's not good enough for you. ISO ball back in the day, you didn't like that. The Warriors change. Everyone's dropping the points. High scoring offense everywhere. Three pointers, and you don't like that.
Well, I still just a lot of standing around. I like ball movement, baby. Okay, I grew up with Bobby Knight's motion offense. Okay, Pete Carril's motion offense. I want backdoor cuts. I love going backdoor. I want to see those things. Okay, I want passing. Okay, white guys love assists. Okay, that's one of the they love assists. Okay, I want to see that. But yeah, it was a bad. Anything, all these athletes were unskilled prior to, like, I don't know, 2005. Just unskilled players. But, yeah, the NFL of the 70s with, and I loved, what was his name?
Joe
Montana. The voice on NFL films.
Segunda, something like that.
Steve Sable?
No. The Autumn Wind.
Yeah.
That guy.
You know. I don't know.
Harry Callis or whatever it is. Anyway, John Facenda. That whole era of run, pass, punt, R2-P2, mm-hmm. and then like just these clotheslines. Oh, come on. Just give me a break.
John, the helmets look like. So mine here, the thing that I wish people would stop romanticizing is the dead. When somebody dies, that does not all of a sudden remove any sort of criticism or anything. Whenever anybody goes, I hate the whole little like.
I think we only do that though for the first day after. Yeah.
I don't know. I think it tends to linger a little bit.
Give me some examples. Give me an example or two.
What was the one we were talking about?
No one's like, you know what? OJ was a great running back.
No, right. Not it doesn't apply to everybody, but there is a tendency to. If you make some sort of criticism of anybody who has passed on, especially if they died young or anything, then it's...
I think we're in a 24-hour rule now.
I'll give you one. I'll give you one as an example in sports that historically still to this day you cannot talk about. Len Bias. You can't talk about what happened with Len Bias because, it's tragic. Like it's tragic. What an innocent soul. It's like... He died... Like the way that he passed away was not from some little, like... People don't want to talk about... how it happened. They just talk about it as this tragedy of this innocent person that was... It's like, you know, he was being pretty reckless in what caused him to pass away in the first place.
We also don't know much about him.
Right. But that's the whole point being just that they make it out to be this issue of...
Yeah, because like, he didn't live long enough.
It's not Ben Wilson, right? Like Ben Wilson in Chicago who gets shot. It's not the same sort of thing, but it's talked about in a similar manner of just, man, he was... this innocent that got caught up in this awful thing. Peyton, what's something you wish people would stop romanticizing?
It's easy. It's the Costco guys. AJ and Big Justice. Oh, I cannot. They were on Jimmy Fallon last night. This is ridiculous.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Dude,
you
these,
don't
know guys these guys are awful.
Oh, my goodness.
No.
I don't know.
That they ate double chunk chocolate chip cookies at Costco and a hot dog, and now they're famous.
Have you seen the we're so-and-so. Of course we're going to do da-da. Have you ever seen those memes? So these guys, it's this big dude and his kid or whatever, and they went to Costco and went, we're Costco guys. Of course we're going to get eat double chunk chocolate cookies. We're Costco guys. Of course I'm going to get my chicken bait. And they're just this cringy family.
This is everybody in my family. These are just a couple of gweeds right here, like just people in my family. Hey, I mean, look at this kid. Look at this kid.
Segment from
Chucky. This kid.
Oh. Looks like the Michelin man.
The Michelin man.
And the Michelin one, not just the Michelin one.
817 says Bobby Belt probably screwed John Benet Rams.
Jesus.
All right. From Heretic over on the Twitch, Cowboys past Super Bowl wins. Want to stop romanticizing those. A lot of people saying Michael Jackson, Chris Benoit. I don't think anybody has romanticized Chris Benoit.
Michael Jackson's a good one. I got a Michael Jackson argument like a week or two ago with people over those things.
Yeah, there's a lot to talk about there. All right, we're doing Ask Reddit here on 105 Through the Fan, 877-881-1053, 877-881-1053. Peyton Russell, what profession do you think would cripple the world the fastest if they all quit at once?
Police, 100%. Oh, it would be the purge.
Jeez,
it would be the purge, man.
Well, that's a hot issue, if you know, Peyton. That's
a good answer, though, right? Is it great?
You would
agree? You would agree, right?
Maybe truthful.
I wouldn't disagree.
Okay.
I would not disagree with that.
But we need law and order, okay? Yeah. Law and order.
Yes.
All the law and all the order.
I'm supposed to go vote today as well.
Well.
Supposed to go
are
vote
you voting
today.
For me? Okay. Are you voting for me? Or are you going to vote for Kamala?
What are your other answers?
So some of the stuff that I thought, like, obviously you've got the ones like police or... different things related probably to, you know, banking and different things where access to money would go away.
Yeah, the banks.
The one that I thought of just like that's a little more...
technical?
A smaller one that people wouldn't automatically think of, but it would get bad. If like you got rid of like trash men and people who get rid of garbage and things like that, that would get awful really fast.
I was burning my backyard.
Yeah, and then you know what happened? You'd set fire. We'd have wildfires everywhere. Wild trash fires.
What about farmers?
Farmers.
Yeah.
Great one. No food. Air traffic control. Can't fly anywhere.
No one to be like, yo, this plane's coming from the south.
Right.
How many
it'd
times
just be like a bunch of Southwest planes just landing wherever they want.
How many times have we seen like there's a rock?
I could definitely get away. There's plenty of people who could get away with not flying. There's so many people I've met who have never been outside of, forget the country, they haven't been outside of the state. I'd be more than fine not flying anywhere.
Think about how often it's like we get a story where it says something like, oh, a tugboat broke down in the middle of this the water over here, yeah, and it's blocked all the ships from coming through, so y'all aren't gonna have toilet paper for 3 weeks, or you're not gonna have this for a month, and you know, oh, everything's gonna surge in pricing now because we can't actually get ships to deliver things over. It very much is, it feels like a very sensitive system that if you remove any one industry, it could.
That longshoreman strike, I mean, it only went on for a couple of days, but they said like every day is like 5 days to catch up.
What about teachers?
I mean, that would be crippling. It's a long play, because then you'd have a team of nitwits that take over the world in 20 years.
And your kids would be home with you.
That'd be true.
That would shut down the world for the worse.
972, and we're getting a lot of this one, truckers in general, truck drivers.
Yeah.
469, prostitution. 903, IT guys. 469.
My computer career.
Water purification plants. A lot of different answers there on the Twitch. EJL Viking on the YouTube says truck drivers, or not YouTube, Twitch. I know they don't like being lumped in with each other. They view themselves as different communities.
Tolo Mike said mechanics.
Yeah, because I wouldn't. My car would never run. I would just have to buy a new car.
Yeah, Mike knocked like $500 off of my price for that.
Look at that. Awesome.
He's not going to.
All right. We're doing Ask Reddit here on 105 Through the Fan. Sean Sharif, what was the reason you last cried?
I did tear up when my daughter was born, but I don't know. I don't think it was because of my daughter. Like, my wife's procedure method in terms of delivering was like so traumatic. It can never be any easy births, like the Chia follows, just like in bathtubs, like pop, 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 passing rocks around, like no looks around, you know, it's just so simple, it's so easy. And everyone's just like, oh my gosh, it was so simple, it was so easy, just like that. I feel like it had so difficult, so freaking traumatic. So I think once that process was over, Amanda was still breathing after they nicked her bladder. I think that was the last time I did tear up. But I will tear up over like a great emotional like TV story told. A Tom Rinaldi thing, an ESPN classic thing, like Freddie Freeman. I didn't hear him say the stuff about his dad, but that type of thing, that can get me to tear up like a good sentimental story. I'll tear up and cry over that.
It's always said, I always heard it said, that the older you get, especially as a man, the older you get, the more things of just like sentimentality or you know, family, that like that'll get you.
I called my dad the other day and he's just crying. I'm like, what's your problem? And he's like, oh, I was thinking of thinking of Oliver. And I'm like,
you're gonna get to that point, Sean.
You start thinking about your mortality. Sure. Like for me it was my dad, the other day.
Yeah.
That was the last time. I don't know how I'm getting through that they want me to do a eulogy. Okay, and I said, Ma, I don't do eulogies. I do roasts. I'm going to roast the hell out of that man.
Do you have any jokes or any?
Yeah, the first joke is, do you think he knows why he's here? First one I'm going to start with.
Dang! Bobby, you got to write some material.
Jeez.
For that.
Roast good. Ralph Choppy.
Peyton, what was the reason you last cried?
I mean, when the Rangers won the World Series, I did tear up. But
did you?
I did. That was a great... Great thing in my life to see the Rangers win the World Series finally, especially after 2011. But last time I just broke down was in 2020. Got the text from my mom saying we had to put my dog down. He had issues going on, and I was at work, and so I couldn't be there with my dog, react to it. And so I went to the restroom and just cried it out.
Stop romanticizing the dead, Peyton. All right, so my answer on this one is it was the last time I was driving in here late. And I got teared up because I was so mad on the phone with you.
What?
I was starting to get teared up because I was just so angry. It was like getting me all emotional in general.
Angry
and I
tears.
Started,
okay.
Yeah, it was. It was like I was getting so angry and like just overwhelmed and anxious about it.
I did not text you this morning to make sure that you were awake.
I noticed.
Because I feel like you're getting irritated by it.
No.
But I'm not going to stop. I just didn't do it today.
Drop the ball.
What are you doing differently?
I mean, the only thing I did differently is I was always setting the alarm at 5. I've set it at 4:50 now.
Okay.
That's a little different.
Glad you.
But I don't know if it's...
You're not putting it away from your bed.
I have...
You're not setting 5 of them.
There's 4 set. There's 4:50, 4:54, 5, and 5:04.
But right by your nightstand.
Depends on the night. Like, sometimes as I'm going to bed, I need my phone. And then if I've already set it down, I'm like, if I get up and set it down over there, I think I'm going to wake myself up more.
Ask Reddit every Tolo Tuesday during the commercial-free expressway where we hook you up with tickets as well here on Sean, RJ, and Roberto. Jerry Jones live at 8:30. But let's go around the rest of the NFL. You had Monday Night Football, and I think RJ and I are going to defend the quarterback that everyone is absolutely destroying. Really? Is it not the same thing as other sports and other positions? Around the rest of the NFL, including going into the dark with Aaron Rodgers next.